Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the P1 podcast with Matt and Tommy. Yes, we are here to dive into the Japanese Grand Prix. It's done and dusted, signed, sealed, delivered, and Charles Leclerc leads the... He did actually lead for a few laps, and therefore he was provisionally world champion. But apart from that, we actually had a really good race, didn't we, Tommy? And I'm glad that you also feel the same way, because otherwise I might just think that it's my blind Leclerc fanboyism being happy about 8th to 4th. But no, it was a banger. Not a banger, sorry. It was a banger for a Max Verstappen domination.
I think there is a little bit skewed from the fact that it feels like so long since we've had a really, really good race. But for me, based on, you know, what we've had so far, I really enjoyed it. There was a lot of overtakes, a lot of action. It just showed that even if Max Verstappen wins and is gone, which he did literally right from the very start, as long as there's action elsewhere to keep you entertained, it's enjoyable, and I really enjoyed the race.
Now, the final shout-out for the P1 live show. It is alarms are sirening. Sirening. The sirens are off. The P1 live show is next week. I've got a cold, as you can quite hear, clearly hear in my face right here, but I'll be fine by Thursday. Cambridge, sold out. Can't buy any tickets for that, so forget that. But Bath and London, there's a few tickets left if you want to come and see me and Tommy in the flesh. Next week, we're going to talk all things off camera. Oh, it's going to be filthy, as well as also meeting other Formula One fans and all kinds of stuff. You can come solo, you can come together with people. It doesn't matter. It's an inclusive, fun evening out, isn't it, Tommy? We're looking forward to it, and would love to see you there. So final call. The ship
Get
is sailing.
Your tickets.
Come and see us next week. Would love to have you there. Now, before we get into our most memorable moments, there is a question. Now, this is a bit different. We're changing the format. What's going on? But we do have a question. It's from P1 Patreon member Michaela. What happened to Suzuka being a track that's hard to overtake at? Just straight up in there. We're gonna buzz off the fact that
we saw some action.
We did see some action.
So we need to talk about it.
The cars are still too big. They still struggle to follow. But the thing that was there was strategy. The tyres can save us. They can save us from the pits of despair and give us some Grand Prix racing. And that's exactly what it did. We had mobile chicanes like Alpine, Mercedes. It was great to have them in the mix doing something slightly different, but it also meant that they were sitting ducks. You had Alonso on the soft tyres going aggressive at the start and then falling a little bit back. You had plenty of things to keep an eye on, which is just so much better for the brain. It's so much more exciting to be figuring it out during the race. Oh, you know, can Alonso hold on? How much longer can he go on the softs compared to, you know, Hamilton and Russell on the hards after the red flag? There were so many things to just keep an eye on, which I personally really enjoyed.
Yeah, like I said at the start of the show, we've still got the same result in that Max Verstappen has cleared off at turn one. See you later. Bye-bye, Red Bull.
Tommy, we're
incredibly quick. No, but we are. But this is what I mean. But it just shows that when there is stuff going on in the field, there is so much to enjoy and watch. And it kept you guessing all the time of, like, you know, at the start, people talking about, oh, is this a good call from Mercedes? Is it a bad call? What's Charles Leclerc done? Oh, no, this is bad. Oh, no, it's actually good. F1 is so much better when there is varying strategies. And this race proved it. It's a track that's very difficult to overtake on. But all it takes is just not every single team to start on exactly the same tyre, all pit at the same time. That is the For me, that is the epitome of a dull Formula One race when you get everyone starting on the same tyre. It's a one stop. Everyone comes into pits at the same time. They come out. There's maybe been a couple of changes in the pit stop and that's it to the end. And that is unfortunately what we've had for a lot of the season, it's felt like. That, it felt like there was something going on, whether it was an overtake, whether it was a five-car battle in the pits, which was wild. It's just good. I really enjoyed it, really enjoyed it.
It's almost as if changeable conditions from obviously it being quite a lot warmer today for the race, and also having one less practice session and the teams not knowing exactly which tyre to go on, makes for better racing. Wow. You would almost think that throwing some more curveballs in as Formula One would be a good thing. But I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it was great. I know that there are some people out there that are fully focused on a battle for the win, a battle for the championship, and that I understand. I also want a battle for the win, a battle for the championship. But you also have to then just take a step back and go, well, am I going to sit here every single race hating everything and going, God, Max, why are you so good the whole time and not enjoying Formula One? Or can you then start to appreciate the other things going on as well? And that's definitely what you had to do in this race to enjoy it as much as I think we did.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, thinking back to the race, the best thing about that race was just looking down on the timing tower and seeing lots of different colours for the tyres. And that always, when you see that, you know there's stuff going on. Because normally, you know, I think we said it in the previous race, this is painful to watch, that there's a second between everyone or a big gap. They're all on the same tyres. Where are we going to get any action? Whereas, you know, as soon as you see people on different tyres pitting, making things interesting, it does show. I mean, this, I am adamant. In my opinion, my favourite era of Formula One has been that early 2010s. And I know a lot of people find it maybe a little bit farcical with the Pirellis, that they were a little bit maybe too extreme. But for me, that was my favourite era. There was a lot of action. And it just shows that it doesn't need to be too ridiculous. We don't need 8 stop races. We just need 2 stop races.
Just 6.
2 stop races and people on different strategies. That's all it
early
takes.
2010 era, otherwise known as the 4 stop strategies, and the tyres literally melting away and having one racing line, and if you go off of that, it's basically wet with dry tyres. But yeah, I agree that the strategy was a really big element to this, and thoroughly enjoyed it. Now let's go to our most memorable moment, and we're going to start with me. Mine is Leclerc. What a man! Let's talk about him. And the strategy that they deployed for this race, both Charles and, of course, Ferrari as well, it gave me a lot of hope, a lot of happiness, actually, and more belief than ever into the Fred Vasseur Ferrari era. I feel as though he is having a positive change. Whether it was Leclerc's end choice, whether it was Ferrari, you know, putting that to Leclerc, whatever, doesn't matter. They're working in tandem and they're getting the right result. That's all that matters here. It's not a case of, you know, I saw some people saying, well, actually, Ferrari was pushing for Leclerc to have a two-stop. And it's like, well, yes, they're going to give all the options that are available and whatever. But Charles obviously took it into his own hands, made that one-stop work, which, did anyone else do a one-stop? Magnussen did, and that's it. So Charles, on a car that only last year was notoriously known for having horrendous tyre wear. You fast forward a year later, Ferrari have genuinely taken a step forward in the race drivability like they promised, which I am very, very happy about. Go on the Ferrari. But also for Charles to have driven in such a, I'd say, well-managed way. Now, it's funny. There's been a lot of talk recently about Damon Hill and his slightly skewed approach perhaps to Charles Leclerc's performances recently, and some of the quotes that he's been saying about how Sainz has been the better driver since yada yada yada. And even though Charles drove an unbelievable race, Damon ended up saying something like, oh yes, he drove to what Ferrari told him to do. I was like, really? Is that it? Is that all you're going to say about Charles? I only watched that just before recording this podcast, hence why it's in my mind. But I thought Charles did a great job. he picked his battles wisely. Turn one, we'll talk about how that is maybe the best and worst corner in motorsport combined for battling. But overall, I think fourth was definitely the maximum that he could have achieved today.
Yeah, what a difference it all makes with Ferrari and their strategy. That it was a brilliant strategy. And it's funny you mentioned the one stop. I did not have on my bingo card that we'd get a one stop and the only two people to do it would be a Ferrari and a Haas.
So true.
So they've both sorted their problems. But back to Ferrari, it's brilliant from Ferrari that they are just going in the right direction. They've handed over the meme strategy over to Mercedes, which we'll get into later.
And McLaren potentially as well.
And they're just doing a fantastic job. Obviously, you know, Charles didn't have a great quali and had to do something different in a race where it's difficult to overtake. And he delivered. Of course, you know, had a small mistake where he went off. But in my opinion, you know, you're just pushing the tires so much. It's not excusing it, but he's pushed the tires a lot.
No, we discussed that in the
incredibly,
Twitch.
Incredibly
we
long.
We discussed it.
It was a master plan.
It was on purpose.
It was on purpose
to force Lando to pit, thinking that, you know, whatever, and then they both pit at the same
big,
time.
Big
just
brain.
Saying. Yeah, huge.
But I don't think ultimately that changed his race at all, that incident, regardless of what happened. So, yeah, for Ferrari to take a comfortable 3-4 when we said that, oh, it looks like McLaren actually much stronger at this track. Leclerc obviously down the order in qualifying. It's a great result. Like Ferrari just having a really, really good season. And it just, you know, they've not got the speed of Red Bull, but in terms of like how they're operating, they're doing an amazing, amazing job.
And that's exactly what Leclerc said after the race, actually. He said that they're maximising, really, this season so far, that the points available to them. Of course, Carlos didn't race in one of those races, but apart from that, Ferrari have been executing on a level that you would expect Mercedes to be doing, but it's changed hands, which is very exciting. P1 Patreon member MZT, can we talk about the positive step with Ferrari this year? No crazy tire deck, good strategy with both drivers, and not a single we are checking. Now, that last point is very important. I have heard we are checking this year because I remember my head nearly coming off, but there was no we are checking in this race, at least not that I heard. So that is a good positive sign. The less they're checking and the more they're deciding is a really good thing for Ferrari and no delays. I think obviously there was a bit of uproar perhaps of the sprinkling of team order to Charles Leclerc of don't hold up, Carlos. Don't lose too much time. Your fight's with Norris. I'm like, excuse me. Fight is with Carlos Sainz. Thank you very much. But there was no actual team orders. And you, Tommy, you were thinking that maybe they'd have called this off,
yep.
Which was interesting. That would have caused serious uproar.
Well, I just thought protecting the lead. But I think in the end, Sainz had so much more speed that he could pass Leclerc easily without a battle. I think my mind went to Monza thinking, oh God, not this again. Why would they throw it away? But the difference is that, like you say, Sainz had such better tyres that he was easily be able to pass Leclerc, and Leclerc wasn't going to do anything stupid because he knew he was a kind of sitting duck as well. But back to this question of the whole, like, we are checking thing, I think that is the most impressive thing about Ferrari this season, that even if they'd performed that strategy a couple of years ago, it would have been plan A, plan B, plan C, plan D, plan E. Oh, should we do this? No. Pit now. Oh, actually, no, I've changed my mind. Oh, no, now do this. It was just, you're doing a one stop. This is the best strategy. Execute it. Done. Box now. Out. Cars coming up together. Don't hold each other up. They're making the decisions that we've said. They need to be just forceful. They're still doing it in a non-savage way, which is good for the morale of the team and stuff. But they're just being much more kind of, yeah, they're just getting it in terms of like dilly-dallying about and stuff. So, yeah, well done, Ferrari.
Absolutely. And I think whilst we're kind of on the topic of them not being able to battle into turn one, let's talk about turn one, shall we? Because I don't feel like there's a specific question on it and whether it is the best and worst corner in motorsport No, of course not. The last chicane in Barcelona, which of course is now gone, is definitely the worst corner to have ever existed. But it does pose, yeah, it's interesting because it's one of the best overtaking opportunities on the track by quite some margin, I would say. And yet there is no way to defend, really, unless they are going in with the driver ahead on the inside, but slightly more ahead. Like, there has to be almost the perfect level. It's not side by side. It's the defending driver has to be slightly ahead and defending the inside, because then obviously they swoop round the outside on the racing line. Then you get side by side. Apart from that, it's a slam dunk almost every single time if the run is made.
True, but what I'd say to that is, at least I'd much rather see that where they have to swoop round the outside in the corner than a DRS pass on the straight. So from that
side, I guess.
Like we would much prefer that, but I do get what you mean in the fact that because it's not a heavy braking zone, the person that is being overtaken is never going to be able to stay ahead because they can't essentially like outbrake someone. You can't outbrake them into the corner and things like that. So, saw a lot of moves into that corner. Quite amusing. I don't think there's a question about it, but I said on the Twitch watch along, I was like, miss the days where people would make a lunge into the final chicane like the old days. And then George Russell was like, well, okay.
Oh, Tommy.
and then showed us exactly why they don't do it anymore, because the cars are too big and it doesn't work.
Yes, exactly. Now, Tommy, why don't you go to your most memorable moment? Because I believe this person did do one of those moves into turn one as well.
Yeah, so my most memorable moment is time to fanboy about Yuki Tsunoda. You've had your Leclerc fanboy, now it's my turn. And I wasn't initially going to actually make this my review, but the thing is, he has had such a good, like, few races. I was worried I was hyping him up too much, and then I've looked into it, and I actually think he's gone underappreciated of what a good job he's doing. The last 10 races I've looked into, and Yuki Tsunoda has been best of the midfield in 6 of them. We always talk about how it's so hard to score a point. He got P8 in Austin, P6 in Brazil Sprint, P9 in Brazil, P9 in Abu Dhabi, P7 in Australia, P10 in Suzuka. The guy is on such a good run of form. And I think he's still maybe being underappreciated, because I personally think that if you swapped the season Daniel Ricciardo is having with Yuki Tsunoda and swapped them round, it would be Daniel Ricciardo, he's putting pressure for the Red Bull seat. He's driving brilliantly. He's finishing best of the rest every time. He's delivering in that car. Look what Tsunoda's doing. He's not doing enough. And there just seems to be no talk at all that he would get that seat. And I think it's time to sort of start respecting Tsunoda more of he's not just this Honda driver that his whole career is all about Honda and where that goes. I think he's literally just good enough to be where he is. And I think he's been one of the most impressive drivers of the year.
Well, I will tie in the talk. Yeah, there you go. The Tommy talk is done. I will tie in this question. P1 Patreon member RR Rebel. Should Helmut Marko change his attitude to Yuki? He should be a top contender for a Red Bull seat next year. What a progress so far this season. Your point is absolutely spot on, Tommy. I think that there are obviously lots of other reasons as to why Daniel Ricciardo is spoken about a lot, and his trajectory previously and the fact he's a race winner. Yuki Tsunoda's in a different part of his career. He's still building. He's still proving himself. And I think that all he can do is produce a fully consistent season. And the fact that he's done 10 races that are pretty impressive to say that, or 6 of them were at the best of the midfield, even though we keep moving where the midfield, I guess, is. But apart from that, Tsunoda, all he has to do is not have these dips of horrendous performances or dive bombing his teammate in Bahrain after the race, things like that. Like, if he can just show that he can be a team leader for a whole season, a few seasons, then maybe the attitude would change a little bit. But as I say, I think there's plenty of sort of love story attached to Daniel Ricciardo as to why he gets so much media attention for it. But Tsunoda does absolutely deserve the plaudits that he sometimes gets, and sometimes doesn't. And I think that today was a great performance because he was screwed over by the team a little bit. Then the team gave it back to him with a great pit stop. The five-way fight in the pit stop for what was P11 at the time, which turned out to be a point, was massive. And then Tsunoda delivered after that. And I really need to blow my nose because I can't say ends very well. But well done, Yuki. A great, great performance.
Yeah, he made some fantastic moves. I think, unfortunately, the way Red Bull is and always has been is it's all about the right place at the right time. Because in my opinion, Yuki Tsunoda has now achieved and now done more, in my opinion, than Alex Albon and Pierre Gasly did in a Toro Rosso to get the Red Bull seat in the first place. I think he's been as good as those guys, if not better, in the case of Albon. Yeah. And he deserves a shot. The problem is now is Perez is actually delivering and doing a fantastic job. So that, unfortunately for Yuki, he kind of is hoping that he needs to keep up this form when either Perez has a dip or decides to dip and leave Formula One. If he decides to, if he wants to retire, I don't think he would when he's got a Red Bull and he's winning. I think he'd have to be forced out. But Perez can't go forever. It's unfortunate for Yuki that it's just he's peaked at a time where does he go? And Perez is delivering enough, but Red Bull do need to think about the fact that Max isn't. I don't think Max will leave now, and it seems like he is going to stay out his contract, it seems. But what's next when Perez does get to the age where, you know, he needs to retire? And then when Max, maybe there's all talk of him retiring early, they need a young driver to develop, and maybe they need the next one in Max, and they don't need him to beat Max, but they need to have that driver in place like they've done with George Russell and Hamilton or whatever, like that. So, yeah, they need to think about it. And it's a shame for Tsunoda because, yeah, I think he's proven that he deserves to have better machinery underneath him.
Yeah, he almost needs RB to be a slightly better car so he can show what he can do amongst the likes of Alonso, Russell, Piastri and Hamilton in that race, for example. But he's so far behind that you don't get as much limelight. And also, I guess you can't prove yourself as much. We've seen with drivers in the past, mainly the ones that have been promoted to Red Bull and then done terribly, that it's all well and good being able to deliver in a car that you're not expected to score points in to then turning up in a Red Bull, a Ferrari or whatever, and then delivering week in, week out, podiums. I'll go back to my point. I think it is all about Yuki just showing consistency, showing a level-headedness and a team leader kind of aspect to him. And then I think he will get more headlines, in my opinion. So fingers crossed for Yuki, he can keep that up. Now, let's talk about his teammate and the start crash. Of course, that was between Alex Albon and Daniel Ricciardo into turn number two. And actually, just before recording this podcast, there was confirmation that there is no penalty and it was deemed a racing incident between the two of them. But there was an interesting note of had it not been the first lap, it wouldn't have been the same outcome, which I think suggests that Daniel Ricciardo was slightly more at fault, but not enough at fault to penalise him on lap one. I think first and foremost, I was like, oh God, that's not good from Danny Rick. But then you take into the whole lap one, the fact that it was lap one, there's cars everywhere. The stewards have also taken note of, I think, Lance Stroll being in the situation, despite him not being up the inside, just him being there, perhaps taking the attention away from anything that might have been on the right of Daniel Ricciardo, which was Alex Albon on soft tyres. So I think for Alex, it was risky. It was, I need to make up places on soft tyres. God, I need a point in Williams, but also I need to keep this chassis in one piece. No, I don't think that part was actually going in his head at all. I think it was just the first two. So he did put his car in a risky position, I will say. Daniel Ricciardo, I will apportion more blame to because he literally swiped into Alex and then caused that crash. But I do understand that no penalty being handed out is probably the fairest decision.
Yeah, we're normally meant to slander the stewards and say, oh, they're so inconsistent, they're wrong. But in this sense, I actually completely agree with everything they've said in terms of the fact that I think it in a lap 3 or 4 or whatever, when Stroll's not there and there's not loads of cars around you, the move that Ricciardo does is a penalty all day long and it's his fault. And while it is his fault, I don't think it's enough to penalise him and give him a grid drop for the next Grand Prix or do something like that, because it is one of those turn one, there's a lot of cars around him and he's ruined his own race at the end of the day. Albon is taking a bit of a risk to go down the inside there.
Outside.
Outside. Yeah, inside then outside. It's the nature of Suzuka as well. Like, how many incidents have we seen at Suzuka in these new cars? I'm pretty sure last year as well, there was a bit of chaos at turn one on the first lap because the cars are just so damn wide and the track is so thin that they're trying to go 3 wide and they know they can make up places, like you say, like soft tire runners and things like that.
The thing is, Alex wasn't even trying to go for the move. Like, he was just trying to get past Lance on the left and got a great run. Just wanted to hang out on the right-hand side, let Ricciardo go through and then maybe battle the Aston Martin into the next corner. But because of the launch he got with the soft tyres compared to Danny Ric, who was struggling, that man lost about 5 places going into turns 1 and 2. So he was struggling. I can then see how it would have caught him out even more because of Alex's purchase off that first corner. But yeah, I don't think Alex was not going for that move by any stretch of the imagination, but he just ran out of room. And as you say, we need smaller cars.
Yeah. But while we've sort of mentioned that Ricciardo didn't deserve a penalty, it is another, just another black mark on his name when he needed to deliver some kind of result. And, you know, the TV direction knew exactly what they were doing when they were panning over to Liam Lawson stood behind him and stuff. I'm starting to think that Netflix are directing the coverage but yeah, it's a lot of pressure on him. Do I believe he'll finish the season if he carries on? No.
Oh, well, I was about to actually, I haven't actually posed that question yet. Lucas Rostad
I thought you read it out.
Spoiler alert, Lucas Rostad asks, do you believe Ricciardo will finish the season? I do. I don't think that not purely down to his performance, but everything else surrounding him, I don't think Red Bull would do that to Daniel Ricciardo personally. There is more to this, I think, than just pure utter performance, as we've said before, and what they maybe wanted Daniel Ricciardo to be able to do and what currently is happening is not obviously in the storybook. And I also think that Daniel will have good performances between now and the summer break, for example, when this won't be again another knee-jerk thing. It isn't great. It isn't a good look, Daniel Ricciardo's start to this season. But I also believe that he will have great results that will silence this almost immediately. So, yes, I do think he will finish the season.
I am less and less confident. I think the thing for me is that, I think I said it in the last podcast, that there's clearly a different power, a different level of power in the Red Bull camp now, that Helmut Marko doesn't have the power that he used to, it seems, and Christian Horner has a lot more power. And the fact that I think in previous seasons gone by, Helmut was dictating more drivers and what would happen. And it's clear that Horner loves Daniel Ricciardo and is kind of a bit of his like second golden boy there and might have something to say about it. But if he carries on having these performances, it's going to get a lot more difficult to justify why, because he was already under pressure at the start of the season. He's had a stinker to the start of the season as well. We're just going to get this question maybe every race if it keeps happening, and we're going to
It'll be Ricciardo, it'll be Sargeant, then it'll be someone else.
Yeah, Stroll next.
So do you or not? Because it sounded like you talked yourself out of that almost immediately, because you said, oh, I'm not sure, but Christian Horner has a lot of power and Ricciardo's his golden boy.
I still think that he will go halfway through the season if he carries on these performances, but I'm not like 100% certain like I would have been in previous years. I don't think
Let's not forget as well, let's put a small tiny green mark against Daniel Ricciardo's name that he had a good qualifying and was at least with Yuki Tsunoda, if that is a positive. Let's move away from RB and go to Mercedes. Anjan underscore PN. Mercedes, what's their issue? God, where do we start? Yeah, it's a good question. Toto Wolff clearly very not happy after the race. Ted interviewing him and saying it's not acceptable to have a car that might work in some conditions and not work in others. I think they were sort of backing that hard tire decision, as George was especially saying that it opened up a flexibility of whether they wanted to one stop or whatever that might be. Hamilton, on the other hand, sounded like he never wants to see a hard tire again. And he was not happy in the slightest with that. So they made a decision very early to have two sets of new hard tires as opposed to two sets of new mediums. And I think it was just that gamble, really. I'm not going to slander Mercedes too much for going one way or the other, because I think Horner was interviewed afterwards and he mentioned that Perez might have suggested that he would have liked two new hard tires rather than two new mediums. So there is this sort of chopping and changing the way it wasn't obvious what was going to happen, especially with the hotter track conditions today as well. But aside from that, the strategy, I felt as though they did do that on the fly and perhaps decided onto a two-stop a bit late, considering they had longed it out quite, you know, for a lot. I guess they were learning on the, if you know, hindsight, whatever, they were learning whether the hard tires were going to work or not. And they did seem okay at times, but then it did feel like quite a late call, I would say, for both Mercedes to come in and pop on a used set of mediums for the last stint of the race.
Mercedes fans, cover your ears now, because...
Oh, no. Get your popcorn out. Tommy's coming.
Mercedes I say they're a shadow of their former selves, but the problem I always found with Mercedes was they had an unbelievable advantage, and rightly so, because they built a fantastic car, built you know, an amazing engine, and in the hybrid era they completely dominated. They were winning championship after championship, but we had this perception that Mercedes were like this bulletproof team and, oh, they get everything right. But a lot of the time, even when they had that very dominant car, they would make some errors. It felt like there were quite a few times where the only time they ever had to race another car, like a Sebastian Vettel in a Ferrari or a Max Verstappen in a Red Bull, they'd get it wrong. And now they don't have a very quick car. It's exposing them very badly and how, like, they're just kind of going backwards and backwards. And I think the way they started in 2022, fine, you know, you've messed up the car direction and now it's all about how you lift yourself up and get back to the top. And they're going the opposite way. Like, they're going backwards. They're finishing behind their customer teams. Their strategies, I said it in this race, like, shock, Mercedes are just throwing some random tyres on and going, oh, I hope this works. It feels like they don't really know what they're doing, and they're just sort of like hoping anything sticks, and they're just guessing at the moment. It's crazy to me, and it just feels like they are just getting worse and worse, and it's like, I'm sure, while I joked about Mercedes fans putting their things in their ears, I'm sure like a lot of Mercedes fans are like frustrated, and it's like embarrassing to watch them flounder so much. Like, even their Mercedes pit stops fans, and stuff are just
Mercedes team fans in particular, losing Lewis Hamilton and now seeing this as well. It's just such a dire situation for Mercedes to be in at the moment. And yet the strategy is one thing, the pace is another. As you say, like, it's funny, we were joking yesterday evening about doing some sort of funny podcast for Patreon where we basically pre-record what we think will happen in the race in a small race review. I can tell you right now, that segment of you saying that Mercedes don't know what they're doing, we can literally put in almost every single race and it will probably land, because I feel like you said this most
I'm not
races
saying
so
F1's predictable, but Well done, Max Verstappen, winning by a mile. Oh, Yuki Tsunoda, best of the rest. Oh, Mercedes, they've had a good Friday, but they're terrible in the race. Oh,
and will Logan keep his seat?
Yeah, will Logan keep his seat? We'll get onto that later. Lance Stroll, yeah, oh, what's he doing? Yeah, Mercedes, just it's shocking. It really is that. I mean, Lewis Hamilton, after four races, is only a few points ahead of Yuki Tsunoda in the championship. Like, what?
Yeah, that is wild. I'm sure they will figure it out. They finished second in the Constructors' Championship last year, and they had their highs and lows then as well. Not probably sure as low as
no
this.
No chances, yeah,
but
I don't think.
They might figure it out and start doing at least second fastest in some racetracks, but we will see.
Us since 2022. They'll figure it out.
Yeah, they will. Yeah,
when Logan Sargeant laps them in 2027, ooh, and we're like, oh... They'll
that
figure it
bold
out.
To think Logan will be joking. On the grid. Next question. Oxider Brock. I tried, but there's no defending Logan now, is there? Had his shot and blew it, didn't he? Yes. Next question.
He had his shot many times.
Yes.
And yes.
All he had to do was have a really quiet weekend this weekend. Just toodle around at the back, finish 18th. Say, look, I'm just building myself back up after being dropped in Australia.
But instead, there were moments where he was doing all right, and then...
Yeah, he was running just, an 11th, we believe.
Stop crashing. Says
technically not a crash, just an excursion, I would say. Just wanted to see what life was like in the gravel for a bit. To be fair, I will give him his fair dues. Beautiful reversing out of the gravel. The drivers in the cool-down room expected there to be a safety car because he was in the gravel. But that clutch control must have been something special from Logan Sargeant. And perhaps that's what James Fowles will say in the post-race debrief is, look, there are some negatives here, but let's look at the positives here.
Yeah.
Logan's
he's
really
not
good
great
the
on
level.
The accelerator and brake, but his clutch control is spot on. I bear that in mind for driver
but joking aside, Logan was having good points in the race where
yeah,
I thought, no way is my biggest flop not going to come in after him destroying the car on Friday and him not doing any running. And then... had that issue and obviously finished last of the runners. We'll get on to whether I scored a point or not next time. Next time, later. But he has blown it. I think that is signed, sealed, delivered. Thank you very much. Cheers. Take care. I don't think there's any way of him salvaging this, just purely from a case of he hasn't beaten Albon in qualifying once. He never shows any sort of he's never shown him being quicker than Albon ever. And that's the problem. That's why it doesn't give me any faith of him being able to build himself up again. Because at the end of last year, that was the whole point. All right, it was a learning year. We come into this year now. But as we say with other drivers, F1 is not a charity. And this, I will very, very confidently say, is going to be Logan's last year in Formula 1.
Logan, yeah, as you said in last year. And
He can't.
Yeah, we just have the same conversation every week, like you say, but surely this is now it. I don't understand how they're defending him. There must be more to it than what we're seeing.
Cash, money.
Waiting.
Money, cash. Speaking of cash, let's go to the next question. Caitlin sucks. Why did Aston Martin leave Stroll out for such a long, soft stint at the end of the race? Should they have considered mediums instead? Well, what Aston Martin have done here is they've looked at the other side of the garage where Fernando Alonso, the absolute goat, starts on the soft tyres, fresh soft tyres, full fuel, and ends up going what I believe is 14 laps. I'm going to check live on the podcast to see if a graphic is up that I can... Nope, they are clearly asleep. That's great. But I believe it was 14 laps. At least it was a good long stint with heavy fuel. Let's not forget that. The car is at its heaviest and did a very good stint on the softs. Much, much further on into the race, Lance Stroll gets popped on some softs, which should give him a huge, huge advantage. And this is, he's trying to catch Yuki Tsunoda. He's not trying to catch Piastri or anyone else. This is Formula B he is racing in at the moment. He said about his engine being a different category. He was literally racing in a different category. There was like a 50-second gap between Formula A and then Yuki Tsunoda. How is Lance even still in that fight? I know that people will jump to his defence and say about this soft tyre that clearly degraded and Aston Martin are terrible on their tyres. But Fernando Alonso showed it's possible. And I will not have the explanation of, well, it's Fernando Alonso as the reason as to why Lance Stroll shouldn't have had soft tyres at the end. Fernando Alonso is the oldest man on the grid. He is not in his prime. He's driving very, very well, but physically, he cannot be in his prime. And yet Lance Stroll has been absolutely wiped the floor with this weekend. And if there were two Lance Strolls in that car this weekend, we would think Aston Martin are one of the worst teams on the grid. Well, not worst, sorry, Alpine. But one of, you know, the slowest teams.
We'd be saying they were in Formula B. And instead, yeah, we have this thing every week where we go, oh, it's impossible to get any points because there's the top five teams. But thankfully for Formula B is Lance Stroll exists because it normally gives them a point to go because, it's just annoying to witness because it's a waste of a seat. They're a good team now. The guy has... Yeah, it's just embarrassing to watch him battling. You know, why is he in a pit stop race with a Haas and a Williams while Fernando Alonso is fighting the Mercedes and McLarens? And I obviously, you know what I think about Fernando Alonso, but I do agree with you in the sense that he's at the twilight of his career. Beyond the twilight of his career, the man's doing incredible things to still be racing as well as he is. But Esteban Ocon, when they were Alpine teammates, would occasionally outqualify Fernando Alonso. You can say what you like about Alonso had the worst luck and whatever, but Ocon was there or thereabouts and sometimes would beat him. So Alonso is not this like untouchable driver that must be miles ahead of his teammate. Lance Stroll is not a rookie. He's been in Formula One for absolutely ages now.
Yeah.
And, you know, how many seasons is this? Like 7, 8? I can't remember. But he's a veteran now of F1 compared to a lot of drivers. He'll have done a lot more races than most drivers, and he is not improving. And any other driver loses their seat because of it, and we all know why. And he won't. And it's just frustrating to witness. It's like it is irritating to because we want to see the best drivers in Formula One. We want to see driver changes. You know, we were joking at the start of the season. I know we're going to have this amazing silly season now, but we were sort of saying how annoying it is that we've gone into a new season for the first time ever and there's not a single driver change. But any other driver would have lost their seat based on what Lance did last season, and he's gone into a new season and so far is doing exactly the same thing, going out.
Bro's just chilling.
Yeah.
Bro is just chilling, turning up week in, week out, expecting to be great. But it is strange because he obviously showed huge willingness to get better after his injury, and we all were commending him.
Yeah, exactly.
But that was the best time he blooming drove. It was when he clearly put in a lot of effort to get back and was almost like sort of mentally there. But then since then, we just don't see those... The Lance Stroll of
maybe he needs
years
pressure.
Ago. Where,
maybe Lance needs to go one more race and you're out. And then let's see what he can do. And even if he doesn't fire him, like give him some
you're
pressure.
Out in one race. All right, I'll give you one more. I'll give you what. Maybe that's what they have the whole time, Tommy, is that conversation. And he just keeps saying one more and it's been about 50 races now. Who knows?
Good but, one, Dad.
Yeah, nice one. Yeah.
Also, see give me a new
week.
Engine.
I know. GP2 reference there. But... Yeah, very, very disappointing and as you say, irritating because we do want to see... It's not, we know that in Formula 1, there are obviously plenty of reasons as to why some drivers have seats and some drivers don't. But there are also
this
now,
is the most extreme
very
example
exciting young
ever
talent.
Of that, I think.
Yeah.
In terms of like politics deciding. You know, we talk about, oh, Daniel Ricciardo is probably going to keep his seat because he's like this funny guy. Like, this is the most extreme example of like...
Yeah.
How something can keep you in a seat because we've never seen this in Formula One before where this has happened. Like you've seen pay drivers come into the sport. I know he's not a pay driver because he's you know his dad owns a team, but
and he did have
even
a decent
pay drivers,
career,
for example,
and...
yeah, and he's done it. He's got a few podiums. You're not improving. Goodbye.
But he did get pole at Turkey.
That is his best performance in a Formula One car, in my opinion, Turkey.
Yeah. Okay,
one time
let's move
in
on.
100 odd races, whatever it was.
I know, yeah. I remember when Stroll used to get random podiums when it was crazy races. Now just doesn't do that anymore.
No bottled wins.
Anyway. What?
They were bottled wins, but anyway.
Oh my goodness gracious me. Let's go to biggest winner, shall we? Driver or team. Who has claimed that then? I know you're going to say Yuki Tsunoda, which is fair. It's a fair shout.
Yeah, probably. It's weird because a lot of drivers are kind of where they're meant to be, even though they've had this really exciting, I would say really exciting, but a good race with lots of entertainment. There's not really like one guy that's, oh my God, they're way ahead of where they normally are.
Mm. I think Tsunoda, personally. I think that's probably the most standout performance. I would say Perez as well, showing some good form and exactly where he needs to be to keep that seat. Alonso, he finishes sixth in a car that he absolutely destroyed his teammate in, so he deserves at least some plaudits.
You never know with Alonso how true it is, because I'm sure he says at any time it's become a meme, but he was like, that was one of my like top five drives of all time, which I'm sure he has said after every race.
It was very well done though, wasn't it, on Piastri and how he was giving him DRS to stop Russell coming through.
Yeah, he's still
Carlos
it,
Sainz walked so Fernando could run. Absolutely love that. So
I bet Russell was sweating a bit when he was behind Alonso on the last lap going, oh God, here we go again.
Here we go again. Where's the brake check? Alleged. Right, so that's Yuki Tsunoda for both of us, is it? Is that we're locking that in?
It's got to be Yuki.
Okay. Biggest loser?
Williams.
Logan Sargeant. Yeah, Williams.
I think Williams in general. I think they are
Williams
just,
as a whole.
Yeah, that it's kind of got a bit embarrassing how many crashes they've had. Even, in, you know, we beat up on Sargeant, but that's too, like, well, it's not really Albon's fault, is it? But it's a shocker for Williams as a team to have another binned car and not get any points still on the board when, you know, Haas have managed to get some.
There was an amazing meme in Funniest Tweets where someone had got the video of the mod that you can have on F1 games where it gets rid of the entire car and just has the driver sitting and hovering.
It
was like Williams in China.
Yeah, at this rate, probably happened. Another shout for biggest loser is probably Alpine making upgrades and looking even more like a Formula 2 car.
It was honestly.
It was bad. If it wasn't for Sargeant, they'd have been last on the road again. So,
I hope they found that there was some sort of invisible parachute attached to both of their rear wings, because Gasly in particular was.
Gasly was so slow.
Awful. Absolutely awful, Alpine. So that's going to be a painful debrief for them. But Netflix, they're going to be getting some content, I'll tell you that, because remember how angry they were when they were finishing fifth. Right, let's now go to the predictions that we made on Wednesday. And I'm glad you changed it. We had a lot of deliberation about what the score was. And then we agreed it was 7-all. And I just looked in the sheet and it said 8-all. I was like, wait, what's going on here? But Tommy has changed it back to 7-all now. I thought I was really on for something big here. Biggest good surprise. I went for Lando Norris, which, it was looking good. Let's talk about McLaren, actually, and how they absolutely bottled the strategy with him. How they have lost to Charles Leclerc when they had two completely different strategies is mind-boggling to me. Absolutely mind-boggling.
Yeah, insane. And Lando got a great start, was ahead of Carlos. Like, how did it go so wrong?
He was running in P2 at one point. We're thinking, could he battle Perez for a bit and, you know, see how the hard tyres go? And it was a disaster, really. I mean, not a horrific disaster, but in the grand scheme of things, he should have been up there, in my opinion, fighting signs. So what we're saying is, as a driver, probably half a point. You know, stuck at third on the grid.
No surprise for fifth. That's a very standard McLaren.
Okay, and yours, Tommy.
Yeah, annoyingly, mine as well. I could argue half a point and say that it was a surprise based on qualifying and where he ended up, but he's behind his teammate, which is not what I was going with for that. So
yeah, thanks, mate.
Concede.
Don't you ever put him in that category ever again, Charles Leclerc, okay? Perfect. 0 points for that. Biggest flop. So I'm going to Say it right now. 4 from 4. I went for Logan Sargeant. We didn't think it'd get any worse in Australia, and it did.
Can I just quote you on something?
Oh, no.
You said, you said, Logan Sargeant will be biggest flop. And you said, he'll either crash and ruin the chassis again or just be last. And technically, it was both. So, 0 points.
Wait, excuse you. No, that's 2 points.
No, I'm joking.
That is
it is definitely a point.
Oh, God. I mean, we laugh, but yeah, poor Logan. I can imagine how he must be feeling. But I will be taking that point. Thank you very much. Because it didn't look like I was going to get a point for a while until he ended up in the gravel. And fair enough. He wasn't going to score a point anyway, so he gave me a point in the predictions instead.
Biggest flop, I went for Max Verstappen.
That went well.
Yeah.
Well, you know that, yeah, literally. You get most of your points. You're a points merchant for pole position and top threes. I feel like good surprise and flops don't really ever come in for you. And it's always the opposite.
They never do.
Okay, so zero points for you for that. Pole position, we both went for Max Verstappen, didn't we? And that was signed, sealed, delivered. Thank you very much. And then the top three. Oh, you bastard. So in third, I went for Charles Leclerc, which, that's fine.
I went for Carlos Sainz. Ching.
No way. Lando Norris, I went for P2. I thought I was so onto something there as well for a little while, but nope.
Perez, P2. Ka-ching. I have frauded my way to some points.
You're such a fraud for the top threes. And then first place, I went for Max Verstappen. Yes! Come on, Max. Love the domination. Thank you very much. So a point for me for that.
I went for Leclerc, so no.
Yeah, that's wild. If you had literally just gone for a non-delusional first place, you would have got all three. But instead, that's fine. Right, one crazy prediction. So I'm just reading your predictions. I hate you so much! Not all 20 cars start the Japanese Grand Prix. So...
I knew it.
You're only as starty as the last start that happened. And the last start was where two cars crashed and... the first start, two cars crashed.
No,
so
it's
the
not.
Second start, we had 18 cars begin.
I might have, just for the banter and how hilarious it would have been if they hadn't reached the safety car line and they'd done a full restart and they couldn't have gone on the grid. I might have just given you even a point just because of how hilarious it would have been that it would have come true. But,
but talk to me.
It didn't. You started on lap two. What?
Yeah, but it was always going to start on lap two. We know that from Australia last year when we spoke about how there was a lap deleted. So technically, the Japanese Grand Prix started on lap two.
Keep
come
trying.
Come on, everybody's listening. Help me out here, please. Come on. Talk to me.
No. It's still close. It's still close. Don't worry. And I went for Yuki Tsunoda. Best of the rest. Glorious.
So what I will actually say to this one, to combat this, is the fact that Lance Stroll is showing that Aston Martin is part of Formula B, and therefore Fernando Alonso is actually best of the rest. Thank you very much, 0 points.
Don't use my boy Fernando as a weapon against me.
I think I'd say my boyfriend. Don't use my boyfriend against me.
Okay, it's still close.
Well done, Tommy. So,
10-11 now.
What is it now? 10-11. We are still massying this all day
we're doing
long.
Good, I think.
Okay, and then what about you three? You three, strange way of saying the three crazy predictions. Maryam Soltan, McLaren double podium. New. Verka Bock, race will not be finished due to rain. God, we only got a little bit in practice, and that was about it. And into the fast lane, Alpine points. No.
Ooh,
so that
was
0 points for the wonderful
minus
listeners.
Minus points, I think.
Yeah, pointless, then you would have got a point. But unfortunately, that did not happen. Right, Tommy, what are your final thoughts, sir?
Final thoughts are, I am pleased. Well, two final thoughts, actually. I am pleased. I'm pleased that I've seen some good strategy overtaking and stuff, because it feels like a long time coming when I've sat down and been like, satisfied about Formula One race, because it's been frustrating for a while. And
sorry, hold on. let me just put, before you go to your second point, this is a Max Verstappen fan that has said he's only just sat down feeling satisfied after.
Well, because I don't want to see him win by 20 seconds.
I know. I'm only teasing, but also screw you. You're a Max Verstappen
it
fan.
It shows what a place
how
it's in.
It's fallen.
And secondly, P1 Live Show. Bring it on.
Ooh, hello, Tom Bellingham with the plug. Love that. And that will be my final thought. P1 Live Show next week. So if you'd like to come along, please do. Links everywhere in our link tree and all that sort of stuff. Just type in P1 Live Show in Google and you'll be able to get a ticket as well that way. So thank you, everybody. We are going to be doing our F1 to 10 driver ratings as always. And we will be asking for your submission as well in terms of where you would rate each driver. So look out on social media and also social media. Social media, isn't it? Yeah, we'll post that. So get involved and we'll take the highest rating for each and have that as the fan rating. And that is it. See you very soon. Lots of love. Bye.
Bye.
Make sure you follow us on all of our socials. We're MattP1Tommy on Twitter, TikTok, Twitch, and Instagram. You can also sign up to our Patreon at the link in the episode notes for ad-free episodes, full video interviews, and extra bonus episodes for as little as $5 a month. Finally, make sure you're following us on Spotify. See you soon.
P1 is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.